Eyes closed, I become aware of something else. A sound from somewhere else in the house. My eyes fly open. "Do you hear that?" I ask him. He lifts his head from my neck.
"Hear what?"
"That sound. It sounds like something scraping." It's a very disturbing sound. It almost sounds like nails on a chalkboard. Again and again and again. And it's coming from somewhere within the house. He grins at me.
"Maybe is man with hook for hand on roof?"
I smack the top of his head. "I'm serious. What is that?" We both lie there for a moment, listening. And of course, that's when the sound stops.
"I do not hear it,"
Enzo says. "Well, it stopped." "Oh. But what was it?"
"Was probably the house settling."
"House settling?" I make a face at him. "That's not a thing. You just made that up right now."
"Yes, it's a thing. And anyway, are you the big expert on houses? Houses make noises. It is a house noise. No big deal."
I'm not sure I agree, but at the same time, I can't very well argue now that the noise has stopped. He raises his eyebrows.
"So, may I continue?"
I'm not feeling super amorous after listening to that scraping sound coming from within the house, coupled with the completely exposed window. But Enzo is already kissing my neck again, and I have to say, it is extremely hard to ask him to stop. 10. Thursday is my morning off. The kids walk to the bus stop by themselves, like they have been doing since yesterday. I'm sure Janice is traumatized when the two of them show up all alone, but I'm not too worried about it. I do watch them from one of the windows in front of the house, which now has blinds. Thank you, Enzo. And I watch the bus collect them and carry them away to school. They're fine. Motherhood is a state of constant low-grade worrying, but I refuse to be the type of woman who puts her child on a leash. At some point, you have to let it go, even if it drives you nuts. Once they're gone, the house is so quiet. Ada generally keeps to herself, but Nico is always a whirlwind of activity. When he's not home, the house seems deathly still. It was quiet back when we were in a small apartment, but now that we are in a larger house, albeit cozy, it's so much more quiet. I think our house has echoes. Echoes. I don't know what to do with myself. Maybe I'll make myself some breakfast and read a book. I walk over to the kitchen and pull out a carton of eggs. As I get older, I've been trying to eat healthy, and I've heard eggs are pretty healthy if you don't fry them in oil or butter, which seems patently unfair, because that's what makes them taste the best. So I've started the water boiling for my oil/butter-free egg when the doorbell rings. I hurry over to the front door and fling it open without checking who is out there, because that's the sort of neighborhood I live in now. Back when we lived in the Bronx, I never opened the front door without checking who was waiting on the other side. If it was someone I didn't recognize, I demanded ID to be held up to the peephole. But this neighborhood is so safe. I don't have to worry about anything anymore. But I am extremely surprised to see Martha, Suzette's cleaning woman, on the other side of the door, clothed in one of her flowered print dresses, paired with a crisp white apron, a pair of rubber gloves in one hand, and some sort of advanced mop in the other. "Hello," I say, because I'm not sure what else to say. Martha stares at me with that same penetrating gaze, her broad face a mask.
"It is Thursday. I am here to clean."
What? I remember her mentioning that she was free on Thursdays, but I don't remember agreeing to let her come. In fact, I distinctly remember trying to come up with a nice way of telling her we weren't interested before I got distracted by Suzette insulting my pie. Would she just show up here without having confirmed the plans? Did Suzette put her up to this? I say, I appreciate you coming and all, but as I was saying the other night, we really don't have... Martha does not budge. She's not getting the message. "Look," I say, "we don't... I mean, I can clean the house myself. You don't need to..."
"Your husband told me to come."
Martha interrupts me. "What? He did?" She nods almost imperceptibly.
"He called me."
I say again, "Excuse me for one second." Enzo has a late start today, so he's sleeping in this morning. But I sprint up the stairs, and when I see him lying on his side of the bed, I give his shoulder a shake. His eyelashes flutter, but he doesn't open his eyes. I shake him more violently this time, and he finally looks up at me sleepily.
"Millie?"
he murmurs. "Enzo," I say, "did you call that cleaning woman Suzette recommended?" He sits up slowly in bed, rubbing his eyes. There have been mornings when I have seen him be instantly alert and leap out of bed immediately at attention. But I haven't seen him do that in a long time. Maybe not even since the kids were born. These days, it's a 5-minute process to get him coherent enough for a conversation.
"Yes," he finally says, "I called her."
"Why would you do that? We can't afford a cleaning woman. I can do it myself." He yawns.
"It's okay. Not that expensive."
"Enzo." He takes another few seconds to wake himself up fully. He swings his legs over the side of the bed.
"Millie, you are always cleaning for people, ever since I know you. So this time, someone cleans for you."
I wring my hands together. "But..."
"No but," he says. "She will only come twice a month. Not that much money. Also, Nico is going to empty the trash now, and Ada will do the dishes. I talk to them."
I start to protest again, but actually, it would be nice not to have to clean for a change. He's right. It's something I have always done. I went right from cleaning other people's houses to cleaning up after my children. Not that Enzo does never help, but cleaning a house of 4 people is a big job.
"Not that much money," he says again. "You deserve this."
Maybe I do. Maybe I do deserve it. And anyway, his mind seems made up. So, I'm not going to argue. Except, why does it have to be Martha? I return to the living room, where Martha has efficiently located our cleaning supplies and put herself to work. Okay, she does have a bit of an issue with staring at me, but plenty of people are socially awkward, and she seems to be an incredibly competent cleaning woman. Most families I worked for had endless instructions on how they wanted everything done, but I vowed if I ever could afford that kind of help, I wouldn't be so obnoxious. "Enzo says it's okay," I report back to her. She gives me a crisp nod. The woman hardly ever talks. She reminds me a bit of those guards for the royal palace in England who can't talk or smile. I attempt to make my egg in the kitchen, but it's hard to cook with Martha right next to me, efficiently scrubbing our countertop while also glancing up at me every few seconds. Even though our kitchen is much larger than the one we had back in the city, it's weird to be here while she is cleaning. It feels awkward, like I'm some sort of fancy rich person who employs servants, which is funny considering, well, we can barely even afford this house, even at 10% below asking. This house, which possibly used to be occupied by barn animals, although I don't actually believe that. I mean, I'm pretty sure. I awkwardly step aside so Martha can get her work done. "Excuse me," I mumble. Most people I worked for used to leave the house when I was cleaning, and I appreciated that. Even if the employer was not actively telling me how to clean, which some of them did, I always felt like they were silently judging me when they were in the house, or watching me to make sure I wasn't stealing anything. And even if they weren't doing either of those things, they were simply in the way. Finally, I give up on the egg. I grab a banana instead, because it's the only breakfast I can think of that doesn't involve cooking. I carry my slightly brown banana out to the living room and plop down on the sofa with my phone in my other hand. Maybe I can take Wednesday mornings off instead. I sort through my emails, dealing with what I can. The kids have been at their new school for less than a week, and already I've gotten dozens of emails from the school. The principal seems compelled to write to all the parents daily. That is a stark difference between this school and the previous public elementary school in the Bronx. We may not be paying tuition here, but the parents expect a lot. Daily emails, apparently. I end up deleting almost all the emails from the school. I mean, how many messages can you read about the upcoming book fair or something called Lego lunch? The banana isn't terribly satisfying, but it does the job. I figure I'll go get some errands done outside the house while Martha is cleaning. Except when I get off the sofa and turn around, I almost jump out of my skin. Martha is standing rigidly at the entrance to the kitchen. She is so still. She almost looks like a robot standing there. Or is cyborg the correct terminology? Either way, it startled me. I thought she was busy cleaning in the kitchen, but apparently she's been standing there and staring at me for God knows how long. And when I catch her doing it, she doesn't look away. She is unapologetically staring at me. "Yes," I say.
"I didn't want to bother you," she says.
It's fine. What do you need?" She hesitates for a few seconds, as if carefully measuring her words. Finally, she blurts out,
"Where is your oven cleaner?"
Is that why she was looking at me so intently? She was just confused about the location of the oven cleaner? Is that really all it was? It's in the cabinet, right by the stove. Where else would it be? Martha nods at my answer and returns to the kitchen, but I still feel a little uneasy. Even if Enzo wants us to have a cleaning woman, that doesn't mean it has to be Martha. I'd rather not have a cleaner who won't quit staring at me. But on the other hand, she's already working here. If we find someone else, I'll have to fire her. I have never fired anyone in my life, and I'm not looking forward to it. Maybe this will be fine. After all, she knows where the oven cleaner is now, and according to Enzo, her rates are very reasonable. Suzette's house is spotless, so she's obviously good at what she does. And like Enzo said, I deserve this.
11. Nico has a play date today with Spencer, the boy who lives at 13 Locust. This play date was nearly impossible to arrange. We've been living here for 2 weeks, and this was the first opening. I had to provide Janice a copy of Nico's vaccination record. No joke. I'm surprised she didn't require blood and urine samples. But it's worth it, because Nico is always bouncing off the walls on the weekends, and he doesn't have a bunch of friends nearby like he did at our old apartment. The play date is at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon at Spencer's house. But starting at 1, Nico asks me roughly every 15 minutes if it's time for the play date yet. It gets to the point where every time he says the word mom, I want to scream. Mom, he says at 3:15. Can I bring little Kiwi to Spencer's house? Enzo and Nico decided they didn't want to wait for a praying mantis egg to hatch and all the mantises to eat each other. So instead, they purchased a baby praying mantis that arrived last Monday. Nico named the praying mantis Little Kiwi in a weird homage to one of his favorite fruits. Not if you ever want to be invited back, I reply. Nico thinks about this. Can I bring my baseball and bat? Tryouts for Little League were a week ago on Friday, and Nico made the team, which is great because it'll be another way for him to make friends and burn off some of that pent-up energy. But as a result, he's been even more obsessed with baseball than he was before. Enzo has been tossing the ball around with him every night. It's very cute to watch because Enzo narrates every move like an actual baseball game. He comes up to the plate. He swings at the pitch. He gets a hit. He runs to the first base, second base. Okay, I agree. Although, I'm slightly worried that Nico is going to let the ball get out of control and break a window, at which point Janice will have a stroke. He has a good swing, but he is not quite as good at control. Finally, it's 3 o'clock, so we can head over for the playdate. Ada is sprawled out on the sofa reading a book, her glossy black hair splayed out behind her. Once again, I am struck by how beautiful my daughter is. I don't even think she realizes it. God help us all when she does. Ada, I say, do you want to come with us? Ada looks at me like I've lost my ever-loving mind. No, thank you. Do you have any friends that you want to have playdates with? I ask her. I'm happy to drive you. She shakes her head.
I hope she's making friends at school. She is not nearly as outgoing as Nico, but she has always had her little tight group of friends at school. It must be hard to start over in fifth grade, and Ada is not the type to complain. Maybe I'll suggest a girls' night out for the two of us, and I can probe a bit to see how things are going. I consider inviting Enzo along, but then I realize I haven't seen him all afternoon. He must be working. He had a lot of clients back in the city, but he's trying to relocate all his business to the island, so he's been hustling a lot. He's incredibly concerned with our ability to make our mortgage payments. I appreciate what he's doing, but at the same time, I wish he were around more. Anyway, it looks like it's just going to be me and Nico heading over there. So I grab my purse and we walk across the cul-de-sac to 13 Locust, the house that supposedly used to be for servants. As we pass Suzette's house on the way over, I can't help but notice a lot of noise coming from the backyard. What are they doing back there? When Janice opens the door for us, her face falls. Like, in spite of the invitation, she had been hoping we might not show. "Oh," she says. "Come in, I guess." "Thanks," I say. As we step onto the welcome mat inside her house, she points down at our feet. "Shoes off." I slip out of my closed-toe sandals, and Nico kicks off his sneakers, which, to my horror, go flying down the hallway. I race over to retrieve them and place them gingerly in the shoe rack. We have barely left the house today, so I have no idea why his sneakers are caked in dirt. And when I look at his socks, they're equally dirty. How did that happen? "Why are your socks so dirty?" I ask him.
"I was playing in the backyard, Mom."
"In your socks?" Nico shrugs. He ends up peeling off his socks, and underneath the socks, his feet are also dirty, but I guess less dirty than the shoes or the socks. I need to dip this kid in bleach tonight. Spencer and Nico seem overjoyed to see each other, like long-lost friends, even though they were in school together literally 2 days ago. They race off to the backyard as Janice shouts after Spencer,
"Be careful!"
Janice is wringing her hands together, looking in the direction of the backyard. I don't know if I should offer to stay or if she even wants me here. What she really looks like she needs is a stiff drink. She finally turns to me, and I'm certain she's going to offer me some lemonade or cheese and crackers, but instead she says, "How often do you check Nico for lice?" My mouth drops open. I want to be offended, but Nico has actually had lice 3 times. So has Ada, and that was much harder to deal with because you can't exactly shave the head of an 8-year-old girl. That's the sort of thing she would have been describing in therapy years later. But I definitely took a razor to my son's head. He wasn't thrilled about it at first, but when Enzo offered to shave his own head too, then it became fun. "He doesn't have lice," I say. She narrows her eyes at me.
"But how do you know?"
I don't know what to say to that. He's not scratching, so...
"Do you have a good lice comb?"
Yes.
"What brand?"
I don't know if I can take much more of this. I mean, I dislike lice as much as the next person, which is a lot, but it's not a favorite topic of conversation. "Listen," I say, "I should get going."
"Oh."
Janice's face falls.
"I thought maybe you could stay for a bit.
I squeezed some fresh juice. Her face fills with genuine disappointment. Even though she was so rude about my choice to be a working mother, if she does stay home all day, she might be very lonely. And I've never been great at making friends either. Maybe Janice and I got off on the wrong foot, and she'll be my first friend in Long Island. I mean, on Long Island. I'd love to try your juice, I say. Janice perks up a little, and I follow her to the kitchen. Not surprisingly, her kitchen is immaculate. The floor looks cleaner than my countertops. She has a kitchen table like I do, and it has place settings and coasters on it. Janice reaches into the refrigerator and pulls out a giant pitcher of something thick and grainy and green. She pours two brimming glasses of it and slides one across the table to me. "Don't forget to use a coaster," she tells me as I bring my glass to the kitchen table. As Janice settles down at the table across from me, I examine the liquid in my glass. Well, it's almost a liquid. It has some properties of liquids. "What is it exactly?" "It's juice," she says, like I have asked a very stupid question. I want to ask what she put in it that made it this vivid shade of green. I can't think of any green fruits that I enjoy eating. Well, there's honeydew, but I don't know if I would want to have honeydew in drink form. But she's watching me, and I realize that I have got to take a sip of this alleged juice. Well, maybe it's better than it looks. It almost has to be. I wrap my fingers around the glass, lift it to my mouth, and then bottoms up. I take a mouthful of it and... oh my God. This is not better than it looks. Somehow, it's worse. This might be the grossest thing I've ever had in my mouth. It is taking all my self-restraint not to spit it right back into the glass. It tastes like she took the grass outside in the backyard, dirt and all, and then turned it into a drink. "Delicious, right?" Janice takes a healthy swig. "And believe it or not, it's very nutritious, too." I just nod, because I'm still working on trying to swallow the current mouthful. "So," she says, "how are you liking your new house?" "I love it," I say honestly. "It needs a bit of work, but we're very happy with it." "Most houses do when you buy them," she says. "And I'm sure you got a very good price on it." I lick my lips and am immediately sorry because they taste like the green substance. "Why do you say that?" "Because nobody else wanted it." Janice's words make me forget all about the bitter taste of juice in my mouth. "What do you mean?" She shrugs. "Only one other person put in a bid, and they withdrew it." "That's not what our real estate agent told us. She made it sound like there were other bids, but they were on the low side. Was she lying to us? Were we really the only ones interested in this cozy but gorgeous house in an excellent school district? How could that be?" "Why wasn't anyone bidding on it?" I ask Janice, trying not to let on how curious I am.
"I haven't the faintest clue," she replies. "It's a fine house from the outside. Well built. Good roof."
"Well, that's a relief."
"It must be something on the inside," she adds.
"Something on the inside?" What's inside my house that scared off the dozens of other couples who must have visited the house? I can't help but think of that horrible scraping noise that kept me awake at night. I was so happy when we got the call that the house was ours. But there hasn't been a day that has gone by since we moved in when I haven't wondered if I've made a horrible mistake. So, Janice says, crisply changing the subject, how was dinner with Suzette and Jonathan the other night? I jerk my head up, feeling a flash of irritation. Okay, now it makes sense why she wanted me to stay. She wants to pump me for gossip about the neighbors. That's why I'm here, not to sample her juice concoction. It was good, I say. The last thing I want is to trash talk Suzette and let it get back to her. Good. That's hard to believe. They seem nice. She purses her lips. They're not nice people. Trust me. I've lived next door to them for the last 5 years. I have to bite my tongue to keep from telling her about how Suzette said the exact same thing about her. Clearly, there's a lot of bad blood between these two. And anyway, the truth is, Suzette doesn't seem like a terribly nice person. As much as I tried to get to know her at the dinner, I disliked her even more by the end of the evening. Jonathan seems nice at least. She's horrible to him, Janice says. She didn't seem like the most attentive wife on the planet, but I wouldn't go so far as to say Suzette was horrible to him. Really? Any time he tries to touch her, she pulls away from him, she says. She puts him down whenever she can. I can only imagine what their sex life is like. I'm trying not to imagine that, actually. Janice's gaze locks with the kitchen window, which has a perfect view of the front door of 12 Locust Street. She can see anyone entering or leaving the house from her kitchen. Suzette Lowell is the worst person I've ever met. Wow. I didn't like Suzette either, but that's quite an extreme statement. She seems... I swish the green liquid around in my glass in lieu of drinking it. She's friendly, at least. Do you know that your husband is at her house right now? I did not know that. And Janice can tell from my face that I didn't know it, which seems to give her immense pleasure. She opened her door to him about an hour ago, she tells me. It makes sense she would know that, given the stunning view she has of the front of Suzette's house. He is still there. That's fine. I force a smile because I don't want to give Janice the satisfaction of knowing that this information upsets me. He told me he'd be working on her yard in the near future, so I guess he decided to do it today. On a Sunday. That doesn't sound like a working day. Enzo works all the time. He's very busy. Janice takes a drink from her glass and then licks away the green mustache it leaves behind. Okay, well, as long as you trust him. I trust him. She smirks at me. Then you have nothing to worry about. Janice is trying to stir up trouble, but I try to ignore her. I do trust Enzo. I mean, yes, for whatever reason, it didn't cross his mind to tell me that he was heading over to work in the backyard of our attractive neighbor. But I'm not going to let myself be bothered by that. Maybe there are things I don't know about my husband, but I know for sure that he is a good man. He has proven that to me time and time again. And even if he weren't, I still don't think he would cheat on me. He wouldn't dare.
I am scared of you, Mili Accardi. And he should be.
12. Were you at Suzette's house today? I ask Enzo the question as casually as possible while he's brushing his teeth. If I'm trying not to seem like a jealous wife during the toothbrushing process, seems like a good time to bring it up. It doesn't get more casual than that, right? He glances at me, pausing mid-brush. He waits a beat, then he starts scrubbing his teeth again.
Yes, I was helping in her yard, showing her gardening tips, like I said I would.
You didn't tell me you were going over there.
Is it important I always tell you where I go?
He spits toothpaste into the sink. I think of all the times he has watched me spit toothpaste into the sink, too many to count. And then I think of all the times he has watched Suzette spit toothpaste into the sink. Never.
It would be nice, I say, if you tell me where you go on the weekend. Isn't that supposed to be family time? Isn't that what you always say?
He gives me an exasperated look.
Mili, this is a job. We need money, badly. What do you want?
Is she paying you?
He doesn't answer, which means the answer is no. So, you went over there on a Sunday, and she didn't pay you. How is that a job? Enzo rinses his mouth out, then spits in the sink again, more aggressively this time. When he looks up, he does not seem pleased.
Mili, she already got me two new jobs. She is helping me. She is helping us.
He waves his arms around.
How do you think we are supposed to pay for this house?
It's an extremely fair point. Building a business is all about word of mouth, and Suzette can help with word of mouth. His shoulders sag.
Look, I am sorry I did not tell you where I went, but you are doing the play dating with Nico, and Ada always just wants to read. So I thought this is a good time to go over there because nobody needs me.
Again, he's right. Everything Enzo is saying is 100% right. And as hard as he works, Enzo has always been around for our family. He used to participate in tea parties with Ada and her stuffed animals when she was little. Even I couldn't bear those boring teddy bear tea parties, but he sat through a million of them. He used to do different silly voices for the bears, although all the voices had an Italian accent.
I'm sorry, I say. I know you're just trying to build your business. I didn't mean to give you a hard time.
He smiles at me.
It is a little cute when you are jealous. You are never jealous.
It's funny, because it's true. Women hit on him all the time, but I've always trusted him. I don't know why Suzette manages to push my buttons the way she does, especially since she's married, so it's not like she expects him to run off with her.
I am sorry, he says. You forgive me?
I don't answer right away, so he comes closer to me and then kisses me with his minty fresh breath. Predictably,
The last residues of my anger melt away. I'm terrible at staying mad at him.
Mom! Dad!
A voice shouts through the door.
Little Kiwi is molting! You gotta see it! Come quick!
There is literally nothing that kills romance quicker than being told that a praying mantis is molting in your house. Enzo and I exchange looks.
Later, Nico,
Enzo calls out.
I am talking to your mom. We're having important conversation. I will see later, okay?
But Nico is not to be put off.
When?
He calls through the door. Enzo sighs, recognizing the potential for sexy time is over.
Just a minute, he winks at me.
You want to see the molting?
I'll pass, thanks. But he glances at the bedroom door, then back at me.
We are good?
I only hesitate for a moment. Yes. From now on, he says, I will tell you when I go over to Suzette's house. I give you my promise. You don't have to, I say quickly. I trust you. And I do. I trust him completely. But I don't trust Suzette. 13. My eyes fly open in the middle of the night. It's that scraping sound again. I haven't heard it in a few nights. I had hoped the house had finished settling, or whatever it was that was making such a terrible noise. But there it is, as loud as ever. I roll my head to look over at the clock on the nightstand next to the bed. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Why is there a scraping sound inside our house at 2 o'clock in the freaking morning? I hold my breath, listening as hard as I can. I don't think it's an animal. I don't think we have rats scampering around behind the walls. I mean, I hope we don't. It almost sounds like... It sounds like somebody is trapped and trying to get out. Janice's words still haunt me. It must be something on the inside. There's something wrong with this house. Inside this house. Something that scared off every other person who came to see it. I can't stop thinking about it. It's driving me out of my mind. Enzo is lying sound asleep beside me. The sound wasn't enough to wake him. Although, to be fair, I could be playing the tuba right next to him, and he would sleep right through it. If I wake him up, he is not going to be happy. He already told me he's got an early job in the morning that's a 40-minute drive away. But on the other hand, he acts like this sound is something I'm making up. I'm the only one who seems to hear it. Finally, I crawl out of bed. I'm certainly not going to be able to sleep with that scraping going on. May as well investigate. The hallway outside the bedroom is dark. I debate if I should turn on the light, my fingers lingering over the switch. I don't want to wake up everyone in the house, but I also don't want to fall down the stairs. As much as I love all the space in this house, I feel a jab of nostalgia for the small apartment in the Bronx where I could pretty much see everything going on if I did a 360 turn. There are so many nooks and crannies in this house. So many places for someone to hide. My eyes have adjusted to the dark,
so I decide to leave the lights out. I carefully feel my way down the hallway to the stairwell. The noise is coming from downstairs. I'm sure of it. Hello? I call down the stairs. No answer, of course. I look back in the direction of the master bedroom. Okay, there's a scraping noise on the first floor of our house at 2 in the morning that sounds like it could be created by a human. Am I really going to investigate this on my own? Even though it will make him cranky, wouldn't it be smarter to wake up Enzo so he could go with me? But I've mentioned the scraping sound to him before. He has repeatedly claimed he doesn't hear it and tells me I'm being silly. He's just going to claim that it's the house settling again, then roll over and go back to sleep. And besides, I don't need a man just to investigate the first floor of my own house. I'll be fine. Anyway, he's within screaming distance. I grab the banister of the stairwell. For a second, the scraping sound grows louder, loud enough to send a creepy, crawly sensation down my spine. It's like whatever is making that sound is moving toward me. Nope, that's it. I'm turning back. Enzo needs to wake up. If he doesn't hear this sound, then he needs a hearing test. Except before I can turn around and go back to the bedroom, it stops. I stand there, waiting for it to start again. But it doesn't. The house has gone completely silent. I'm not sure if I'm relieved or disappointed. I'm glad the awful sound has ceased, but now that the noise is gone, it will be impossible to locate it. I walk downstairs anyway. I take the stairs slowly, descending till I get to the first floor. The first floor of our house seems incredibly still. I squint at the outline of our furniture, cloaked in shadows. My gaze darts from corner to corner, searching for the source of that sound. Finally, I reach out and flick on the light switch. There's no one here. The first floor is completely empty. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, and yet, there was a noise. There was a noise coming from the first floor of this house. I did not imagine it. And as soon as I started down the stairs, the noise stopped. Is it possible whoever made that noise heard me coming and went silent? No, I'm being ridiculous. Like Enzo said, it's probably just the house settling. Whatever that means. 14. Mom! I am stirring a pot of tomato sauce, and I've got eggplant browning in a pan. Guess what I'm making? Pasta alla Norma. I looked up half a dozen recipes online and chose the one that got the best reviews. Then I took a shopping trip to purchase all the ingredients, and I went to the good supermarket, the one on the other side of town. I am working hard on this dish. If it doesn't make Enzo shed at least a single tear, I'm going to be seriously disappointed. Mom! 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 I put down the spoon I am using to stir the tomato sauce and turn to look at Nico, who does not do patient very well. He's wearing the same jeans and t-shirt from his Little League practice today, even though I asked him to change when we got home because they were pretty dirty. But you have to pick your battles sometimes.
He's been on the team for 2 weeks, and the coach told me he's one of the star players so far. And I especially liked the way all the other kids cheered for him when he came to bat.
Mom!
Nico's messy black hair flops in his eyes.
Where's Dad? He said he'd practice with me tonight.
Maybe he meant after dinner? He juts out his lower lip.
But I want to practice now. Dad said he'd show me how to throw a curveball.
I raise my eyebrows. He knows how to do that?
Yeah, it's amazing. You think it's going to go right, but then it goes left, then it goes up, then it goes down, and then it goes right again.
I don't know if this gravity-defying curveball is real or not. Nico hero worships his father, to the point where I'm sure he imagines that curveball could go backward through time if that's what Enzo wanted it to do. Ada is the same way. Both kids think Enzo walks on water, and I'm just an ordinary mom who makes subpar Italian food. But that's okay. Being ordinary has always been an impossible dream for me, so I'm happy to have achieved it. As far as I'm concerned, if my kids think I'm boring, that's great. I'm sure he'll be home soon, I say, and we're going to have dinner in about half an hour. Nico crinkles his nose.
What are you making?
It's your dad's favorite, pasta alla Norma.
Can I have macaroni and cheese instead?
If given a choice, Nico would eat macaroni and cheese for every meal, including breakfast. Ada would too. I'll set aside some spaghetti for you with butter and cheese. Nico seems happy with this compromise.
Can I practice by myself in the yard until dinner?
I nod, thrilled that he's satisfied to practice out in the yard without either me or Enzo needing to participate. Nico happily darts out to the backyard so that he can get as dirty as humanly possible before it's time for dinner. And now, back to the pasta alla Norma. The recipe says to sauté the eggplant until it gets brown, but they are not getting brown. They just seem to be getting mushy and disintegrating. I don't know what I'm doing wrong because I'm a pretty good cook. It's like I can't figure out this one dish that I have to get right for Enzo. I mean, I don't have to, but he always seems to like the food I cook for him. When we sit down at the dinner table and he sees the plate of food in front of him, he always immediately leans over and gives me a kiss on the cheek. It's like a little way of thanking me for making him dinner, even if it's something simple like chicken and rice. But I've never seen him react to a dish like he did to that one he ate at Suzette's the other night. What am I doing wrong? Why won't this stupid eggplant just get brown already? Crash! My head jerks up from the stove at the sound of shattering glass. My son is the world's expert at breaking things, so I am very familiar with that sound. And I'm very familiar with the panicked look on his face when he runs back in the house, clutching his baseball bat.
Mom, he says, I had an accident.
What a surprise. I follow him out to the backyard, and I'm expecting to look up to find one of our bedroom windows shattered. But the reality is much worse. There is a broken window, but it's not in our house. It's next door. He broke one of Suzette's windows. Great. He hangs his head.
I'm sorry, Mom.
Don't say it to me, I tell him. You're going to say it to Mrs. Lowell.
And I'm probably going to have to say it too, because I have a feeling that Suzette is not the kind of person who shrugs off a broken window. This is bad. Very, very bad. I don't know how on earth we are going to pay for this. As I march Nico to the house next door, he acts like I'm leading him to the electric chair. I'm not excited about this either, but he's being really dramatic. You would think with the number of times he's broken something, he would be used to apologizing for it. But as we get closer to the house, I hear voices coming from the back. A female voice and a male voice. And it's not Suzette and Jonathan. I would recognize that accent anywhere. My husband is in Suzette's backyard. Again. What is Enzo doing at Suzette's house in the middle of the evening? Especially after he specifically told me he wouldn't go over there without telling me. I'm so mad. I stomp across Suzette's front lawn to her door. Since Enzo works on yards, I'm pretty anal about never cutting across people's lawns and ruining the grass. But I don't care right now. I'm pissed off. I push my thumb into the doorbell, and, without waiting for somebody to answer, I press it again. Then a third time, just for good measure. "Can I press it too?" Nico asks, wanting to get in on the fun. "Go for it." By the time Suzette answers the door, looking somewhat hassled, we have managed to ring the bell at least 7 times. But when I see her wearing teeny tiny shorts and a tank top that is tied off to reveal her midriff, I feel absolutely no sympathy for bothering her. Or even for her broken window. "Millie," she flashes me an exasperated look, which only grows more irritated when she sees Nico. I could hear the doorbell fine. Once will do. "Is Enzo here?" Her irritation vanishes, and a smile creeps across her lips. "Yes, he's just been helping me out in the backyard." At that moment, Enzo emerges from the back, wearing jeans and a grimy white t-shirt, his hands coated in a healthy layer of dirt. "Can I use the kitchen sink?" he starts to ask, and then he sees me and freezes. "Millie?" Suzette is eating up this drama, but as much as I hate to disappoint her, I'm not here to catch my husband. We have a more pressing matter. I put my hand on Nico's shoulder and give it a squeeze. "I broke your window," he says. "I'm really, really sorry." "My goodness!" Suzette clasps a hand to her chest. "I thought I heard glass breaking."
"Nico," Enzo frowns. "I told you to be careful hitting the ball in the backyard, yes?"
I raise an eyebrow at him,